It's time for the Home Improvement Show. I'm Joanne Brackus, and sitting in front of me, as always, is the president of Renovco, Walter Assey, who is looking for his headphones. Take your time. That's good. I'm going to remind everyone where they can reach Walter for all of your questions. 514-790-0800. That's the best way to get in touch. You can call. You can text. But again, I want to remind you that if it's one of these really lengthy stories that you have to share questions, it's always better to call Walter. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You found your headphones?
I found my headphones. I was on the wrong hole.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to talk about a lot of things. We already got some calls coming in, but I do want to talk because we've got this polar vortex coming in. Yes, so there's going to be potential burst pipes. I think we should do like a quick checklist during the show at some point about what people really need to think of, because the temperatures with the wind chill, Walter, they're saying it's going to feel like minus 30 to minus 37. So I'm sure that does something to the house, right?
Does something to the house.
To our bodies,
to
yes.
To humans.
Why do we live here? But let's get to some of these calls first, but feel free to call in. We already have Bill on the line. Bill has a question about his furnace. Bill, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
So I currently have a forced air system with air conditioning. It's 20 years old. I'm not having any problems with the system at all. And I'm wondering if I should wait till the system craps out on me, or if I should replace it with a new forced air and thermal pump, because I've been told that I'm going to save almost half of my electrical bill by doing this.
You have a heat pump or you don't?
No, I don't. It's an air conditioning unit with just a forced air system.
Okay. So there's a couple of things you could do and explore with a technician. What kind of forced air do you have? What's the brand?
I don't remember.
Okay. Because if you might be able to get away just by adding a heat pump to your system without necessarily changing the furnace. Because what happens is when you're going to install a heat pump, it will work right now up to minus 35. So, you know, typically in the winter, beside the polar vortex that we're going to have, where it's going to go to minus 37, typically it's very rare it's going to go above minus 35. So 98% of the time, you're going to be on a heat pump anyways. So you might get away by not replacing the furnace.
Okay.
If you can find a heat pump, a new generation heat pump that is compatible with the furnace that you have.
Okay. I did get a couple of quotes from a couple of different companies, and one of them was a Lennox, which they told me was only rated to minus 12.
Not good.
But they said it's not good?
Not good. Well, here's the thing. If you have a heat pump that can give you up to minus 35, which is going to be at the lower rate of consumption, it would not make sense for you to go with an old generation technology of minus 12. That's, you know, that's for us, we consider that antiquated.
Okay. They gave me another one. I've never heard of the brand. It's called Move Air, and that one was rated at minus 30.
Okay. I don't know the brand Move Air. But minus 30 is where you want to go. You can go up to minus 35. I believe Rudd have a new heat pump up to minus 35. But if you're not changing the furnace, unfortunately, your options might be a bit more limited. So you have to see with the tech what are the options that are compatible. What brand is your furnace?
Started with a C. I can't remember the name of it, to be honest. But I guess my original question is, like, it's kind of like buying a car. Do I wait until the car stops working, or should I replace it before it reaches end of life?
Well, here's the thing with you, Bill. I mean, right now you don't have a heat pump. So that is by itself a big money-wasting issue that you have. Even if you would have had a minus 12 heat pump, that would have also saved you money. Imagine going to minus 30. So my quick question for you is, your system right now is missing a component at a minimum.
Okay.
Meaning you either add the heat pump or you change the whole system. If the subventions from Hydro-Québec make sense for you to change the whole system, because you have to also calculate the things. But at a minimum, I would add a heat pump to what you have right now, to your system.
Okay.
That would be my minimum.
Okay, right. Bill, thank you so much for that call. You can continue calling in 514-790-0800. Your questions are welcome for Walter Essie, president of Renovco. We've got Brad on the line. I don't know why I just yelled Brad's name. Sorry about that. Brad. Hi, Brad. Brad
Hi.
has an
Good
issue
morning.
With the flooring on your three-season cottage.
Yes, my question is, I'm not even sure what is best for a three-season cottage that is not heated at all during the winter. I was thinking of going with a luxury vinyl plank or a laminate flooring, but I'm not sure which is going to stand up better to that.
Definitely the vinyl, definitely, for many reasons. Number one, laminate itself is probably going to be phased out more and more. For many reasons. One of them is that it does not work very well with moisture, humidity, condensation. Vinyl is waterproof. Now, the only part where you have to make a decision is if your floor is even or uneven. When you have a vinyl plank with an uneven floor, of leveling cement or some shimming, for that to work properly. Now, as far as longevity, for sure vinyl, given the evenness of your floor and the proper installation, is the way to go. Stay away from laminate if you can.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Brad. James is on the line with a very particular question, James, and I feel terrible for you because you have a rat in the toilet?
Well, not really. Good morning, everyone.
Hi.
We discovered that we had a rat when we came back from vacation in the house, and we checked the entire house. We even called what's called a smoke test from a test specialist just to make sure it's not coming from the pipes, and that proved negative. So we went through the entire house, the attic, or an NDG. We didn't see any holes. So we're presuming it came from possibly a toilet. Is that possible?
It is possible.
I thought that was like an urban legend, no? That they come up with it. Is that?
No, you'd be surprised, actually.
Oh,
you
no.
Have, you know, in a warmer country, you can have snake coming out.
Stop, stop.
Yeah, that's true. If you ever go to India, always check the, if you're like on the lower floor, always check the toilet.
Oh, boy.
So, yes, it is possible, but you said that you did a smoke test, because usually that would be possible if there is a rupture in the drainage.
Okay. We did the smoke test, and it was negative, no smoke.
Okay. So, if this would have been negative, maybe the second thing I would do, if you want to eliminate all the possibilities, is I would pass a camera and see with the camera if there's any ruptures or any issues with the pipe. That might be a bit more accurate, if you wish.
Okay, camera where? Through the toilet?
Through the toilet, exactly. The area that you are suspecting the rat came from.
Right.
Pass a camera and then see if, you know, there's any... If it's not a rupture, if there's any bad installation in the piping itself, because for it to come from the pipe, there have to be an access point. And that's what you want to really get to, is the access point.
Okay, James, thank you so much for that call. You can continue to call us, 514-790-0800. That's the best way to reach Walter Essie. You're listening to The Home Improvement Show.
Thank you.
This is the Home Improvement Show. We're here to take your questions. Well, more specifically, Walter Essie, who's the president of Renovco, is taking your questions for your home improvement needs. And before we get to the phone lines, by the way, 514-790-0800, the best way to reach Walter is over the phone. You can also text, but phone is best. For the different markets, Walter, who don't necessarily have the chance to call in time, you've got a great new feature on the Renovco website.
So we have what... you know, we are in Ottawa, and we are in British Columbia as well. We play in different times there, mm-hmm. and, you know, and we've been getting a lot of emails from listeners. We heard you.
Yes.
We put the Ask Walter button at runofco.com. So you just go to the website, runofco.com, mm-hmm. Ask Walter, and I'll do my best to get to all your questions.
Yeah. So Walter will be checking it regularly. And also, so let's say you weren't able to call in because you're from a different market. So we look at the question and maybe we get to it on the following week. So again, it's on the Runofco website. It's big. There's a button right there that says Ask Walter.
That is correct.
With your face right there.
With my face right there.
All right, let's get to some calls. Joe has been waiting patiently on the line. And Joe has a question about... Oh, Joe, can you hear me?
Yep.
About baseboard heating. Joe, take it away.
Yeah, hi. Well, we just got a house in, about like a year and a half ago, and just curious about the electrical heating. So like we have baseboard heating, and then up where the stairs are, if you go up one flight, there is a wall unit with air conditioning, but that could also flip to heat. So I'm just wondering, like I haven't really put it on because I feel like the baseboard heating is enough in the house, but should I be putting that on to conserve and or help optimize the heat in my house?
So, you know, I'm not a big fan of electric baseboard heat. It's already not humid in the winter, and that dries up the air. It burns the air particles. It's not the healthiest of heating elements, if you wish. But you have a system with a heat pump that can help as an auxiliary heat, or in milder day can potentially be the heat. What you need to remember, though, that hot air rises, and those units are usually installed closer to the ceiling. So, unfortunately, they're not as effective as floor registers or electric baseboards that are, you know, at floor level, and they are raising the hot air. So I would, if I want to use that unit, I will do it in the milder days, but not in the very cold days, because number one, it might not work. Depends. Most of these units are anyway set to minus 12. But number two, it's not as efficient. You're going to be heating more the ceiling than the ambient air of the house. So in milder days, you know, you could set the thermostat of your electric baseboards. And I'm hoping at a minimum you have a digital thermostat. Do you have a digital thermostat for these electric baseboards?
Yes. Or? Yeah.
Okay. So set it at a lower temperature, and use the split unit that you have. Put the temperature that you want on that split unit, and then see. And then you're gonna decide at what temperature is gonna be optimal for you to use it or not use it, depending on where it's placed in the house, how high it is, and you know the rooms that it's able to get to. You will decide very quickly how efficient it's gonna be for you. But if most of these electric baseboards are not working and you have only this one unit working, then definitely in those days you are saving money.
And can I just ask a quick question too? Like the air circulation in the house, you know, like if you have one with that just filters the air, should that be running in the winter? Because I've been reading like that it should and it shouldn't. So I've just been having it off over the winter.
You mean the air exchanger?
Exactly.
Okay. So that's a great question. Actually, not a lot of people would have asked that question. So, I mean, usually the main issue that you have, first of all, how old is your home? Let me start by that.
Probably about 10, 15 years.
Okay. So it is fairly recent, right? That means it's hermetic. So these units are typically done for very hermetic homes where they're very, very well insulated and no fresh air comes in. Where you need them the most, ironically, is in the winter. Because in the summer, you tend to open more the windows, and, you know, in the spring as well. Whereas in the winter, you're kind of close off. So you definitely need them because you're not having enough fresh air coming in. Unless you tell me you are flushing the air every day, 15 minutes in the house, which is probably, I'm not going to believe you if you tell me that. So you definitely need it. The only issue you're going to have is it might make the house drier. So you're going to have maybe lower humidity in the house. For that reason, you need to install either a steam machine on your vents so you can have more humidity in the vents, or portable humidifiers in different rooms, and always ensure that your humidity level is between 50 to 55%.
Thank you so much for your call, Joe, 514-790-0800. That's the best way to reach Walter Essie, president of Renovco. Tony's on the line, and Tony has a question about the low temperatures, by the way, as we head into the, it sounds scary and kind of cool, the polar vortex. We're going to be reaching temperatures of minus, it's going to feel like minus 30, minus 37 in some parts of the country. Tony, take it away.
Good morning, Joanne and Walter.
Hi.
All right. First of all, I'd like to know, what is the average temperature a home should be kept at? For moisture, et cetera?
If you're living in it or if you're away?
Living in it.
Okay. So the quick answer would be, if you want one constant temperature or you want variable temperatures during the day?
Pretty well constant.
Okay. The best optimal, if you wish, would be if you're at night, like you're sleeping, the optimal temperature would be 18 degrees.
Okay.
During the day, it's 21.
All right.
Right? So a lot of the cases that you have programmable thermostats, well, what you do is, you know, after a certain time when you are getting close to go to bed, it goes down to 18 degrees and then gradually goes up as you're waking up. You don't. If you are, if you have high tolerance for colder homes, I like to keep it personally at 20 and 18. In the bedrooms, I keep it 18 all day long, all night long.
Okay.
And I love it like this, and I find it's healthier to breathe, and you know, it's just
yes, it's healthier, but it's cold, Walter.
I'm fine. You know, like, you know, you get you get in your, you know, I'm 50 now, right? So.
50 is the new 40. 50 is the new 40.
That's correct.
Okay, interesting. So,
Walter, I have a hot water heating system, and I only have one thermostat. Would that be more or less the same thing here, if you get around 20 degrees?
You have, repeat that, you have one what?
Hot water heating. Was oil heating? Now I have the
hot
tanker.
Water. Yeah, okay.
And I have one thermostat. So should I keep it, what, about 20 degrees?
That would be good. I mean, you could start with 20 to see, because it's also the efficiency of every room. Because the problem with thermostats is where it's placed is where you're going to get the 20 degrees. But sometimes it doesn't give you the same in the bedrooms because the thermostat is far from there. So it becomes really a question of trial and error just to see in each room what the temperature is going to be like. The good news is that you have the healthiest type of heating system, which is the hot water. So that, okay, now, that don't get rid of it ever.
Okay. And no, I won't. Now, if we're gone for a few days or a week or a month, is there something in there which for winter time?
Here's the trick. The issue is age of the home.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to maybe continue?
Yeah, I was going to say, Tony, we have to take a quick break, but stay on the line and we will answer that question because it is important as the temperatures drop to figure out what we do with the heating in the home. Reminder, 514-790-0800, your best way to get in contact with Walter Essie, president of Renovco. You're listening to The Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Your chance to ask Walter Essie, president of Renovco, all of your home improvement questions. 514-790-0800. That is the best way to reach us on the phone. Feel free to send a text message, but calling is best. Lots of people on the line. Elsie. Elsie's been waiting quite patiently right now. And Elsie, apparently you have a problem with your front door. Elsie, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning.
Can Walter hear you is the question.
I can hear
you. Okay, yes.
Okay, perfect.
There you go, Elsie. Take it away.
So I'm calling because about 2 years ago, my front door started to whistle. And we had the weather strips changed. And now it's like 10 times worse than it was. It started about in spring, I'd say. And like this morning, it's crazy. It's really windy where I am. So I'm wondering if I have to change the whole door. Or I have to change the weather strips again. I put my finger like underneath where the door closes and like I can almost see some light from outside too. So
Where do you see the lights from outside? Is it where the door closes, the bottom, the top?
The bottom, yeah. I was trying to see like if any wind is coming in through the door because of the whistling. And when I put my hand at the bottom of the door, I had almost like, I'm pretty sure I saw some light come in.
Okay, so you definitely don't need to change the door because the door jamb, the slab of the door is typically insulated, especially if it's more recent.
Okay.
What you probably would need to change is a brush at the bottom, which wears down with time. It's a weather stripping. It's a question of a couple of hours worth of work, not more. I mean, you're not handy. If you're handy, it's a lot faster. That should take care of the problem. You shouldn't have to change the door whatsoever. Just make sure the idea behind it is the thickness of the weather stripping that you're gonna get. And that's where most people make mistakes. Sometimes they don't bring it, they don't get it thick enough for the gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm assuming it was done wrong like 2 years ago. And
that is correct. Okay. So that's where it will either fail faster or it will fail from day one, really, if it's the wrong size. If it's too thick, it will eventually fail. It will work for a few days, but it will fail. You're going to have problems opening, closing the door and everything else. If it's too thin, it will allow air to come in anyways.
Yes, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I didn't know you had go ahead with your question.
And just so I don't, again, choose like a good company that can come and do that.
So the idea is where you're going to run into a bit of trouble, it's too much of a small job to interest a bigger company, if
100%.
You wish. So you need more like a handy guy. And what your best bet is right now, if you can find yourself a mild day, not in the polar vortex, because that would be the biggest mistake. You get a window installer or a door installer. They're a lot more savvy with this, and they know the sizes and everything else. And that will be your best bet. And now is the best time to get them because they're not busy.
Okay, perfect.
Elsie, good luck with that. And again, during the polar vortex. Tony is back on the line. I accidentally skipped over Tony. Tony, this was my fault. This has nothing to do with Walter.
Tony, I was fighting for you.
He did. He gave me stink eye. So Tony called earlier and he was talking about the temperatures, the ideal temperatures for inside the house. And Walter, what were you telling Tony?
So I know that a lot of people like to standardize the answer, and I really don't. And I'll tell you why. I look more at the age of the home. So, for example, if the home is built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, I know it's a 2x4 structure. I know that the insulation is not that great. I know in certain cases in the 50s, most cases actually, there was not even a vapor barrier. It was a paper barrier that they would use to install. With time, we know that the R value, which starts usually at R12, goes down to R0 in a lot of these exterior walls, making the walls a lot draftier. So the temperature, typically, where it gets problematic is, you don't have a thermostat in every room. So there's always these rooms that are colder than other rooms. And if you are to put something like, for example, most people tell you 50 Fahrenheit or 55 Fahrenheit, which brings you up to 10, 12 degrees. Well, in those rooms, it might really get cold. And some rooms might be really, you might be really playing with fire. Like if the bathroom is a cold area and there's a draft in the walls, you might run into trouble with frozen pipes and so on and so forth. So the quick answer would be, is before you quit your home, try to, for example, play around. If your optimal is 12 degrees Celsius or 13 or 14 or 15, make sure that you measure that in every, especially in rooms where there's water, like kitchens, bathrooms, just to see where we're at with temperature.
Laundry room, things like
that. Yeah, that's correct. Because you don't want to run into, I mean, obviously you're going to bleed the pipes and you're going to shut off the system, but when you turn it back on, you might run into trouble. This is where I'm really nervous about giving an exact temperature, just because it varies. So before you do that, I mean, if you are anywhere between, if you can sustain 14, 15 degrees in every room, it's fine. That will probably be the optimal.
Does that help you out, Tony?
Yeah, that's pretty good. And then another question with regards to, I have a condo up near the St. Sauveur area, mm-hmm. and the condo is in a building, and it's not used very often. So again, should we go 14, 15 degrees in there to avoid mold?
A condo, that's correct. So a condo is a bit easier because typically...
It's sandwiched,
that's correct.
Right, right.
So you will have probably a bigger success with getting, a better reading, if you wish. So yeah, definitely you can go for that, not an issue.
All right, Tony, thank you for that call. We have Grace on the line. Grace has a question about a furnace, I think, and a venting issue. Grace, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
No problem. Take it away.
I am calling because a Trane Energy Star was installed. And it's the thing is, what I would like to know is the venting system. Instead of going up to the old venting system, they did not do that. They drilled through the concrete and they put it lower down. So it's near the earth section of the basement there. What I would like to know, do we have to cover, put a seal at the top of the old venting system?
You're talking about the exhaust?
Yes, yes.
Okay, and when you say, what kind of system is this, the furnace?
It's a Trane, T-R.
I understand, but is it, why do we need a vent for it? What kind of, is it electric? Is it,
well,
it's gas, oil?
I use Energir, Gas Metropolitan, mm-hmm. Not Gas, Energir with gas, mm-hmm. and it's
sent on the chimney, the old chimney.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, yes, it's always a good idea to cap it. You can cap it from the top and then cap it from the bottom. It's for sure you don't want a conduit of cold air now that there's nothing connected to it. So usually what they would do is they would just block it from the bottom. But I like to always block it from the top and the bottom. So, yes.
Yeah, well, this is what I was questioning because this was done 2 years ago, and I find in the family room it's quite cold. We have a fireplace, mind you. So the two things are side by side with a hood, you know, the hood they put over the fireplace and that.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. Who do I call to put the cover on it?
So any ventilation company, really, any ventilation company would do that. It's not, you know.
Do you have a recommendation?
Not on air particularly, but, you know, the best thing is if you can find a ventilation company in your area to service your territory, that will probably be the best thing. Because right now what you really have is they just blocked it with like an aluminum cap. And that doesn't have an R value. I mean, if you want a quick fix, because now maybe it's a winter, they don't like to go up there with ice and snow and everything else.
Okay.
What you could do is you could take that cap out. You could shoot foam into the cap just to kind of give it some insulation. Because right now, technically, you have no insulation. You just have that cap, have a conduit upstairs and all the cold air coming in. That's why you're feeling that cold air in the room.
Okay, if I call the company that installed the system, do you think they will be able to cover it? Because they never mentioned anything about...
No, they won't. They very rarely will go to the top. They will do the minimum possible from the bottom. So it's definitely a great place to start. That's 100%. And you can tell them, look, since you guys did this, it's very cold in the house and da-da-da. And then, yeah, definitely that's a good way to start.
All right, Grace, thank you. All right, Grace, thank you so much for your call. 514-790-0800, your best way to ask your questions to Walter Assey. It is time to take more questions on the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, standing by to help you out in your home improvement questions, quandaries, dilemmas, you name it. William is on the line, and William has something, another rat story. William, what's going on?
Yeah, hello, Joanne. Hello,
hi.
Walter. Okay, I have an old house built in 58. It's a bungalow. I've never had a rat in the house, but I've always been curious. Can a rat come in from the city sewer system and through the pipe and up through the toilet. I was always wondering about that.
This is everyone's biggest fear.
Yeah, it can. But again, it's if you have cracks in the drainage, it can.
There has to be a problem, right?
There have to be a problem, either in the initial installation or in the drainage itself. Especially if you don't have a clapet or a backwater flap, it can happen for sure.
Okay, so when you say a crack in the drainage, you mean the pipe that goes from the municipal sewer to the toilet?
To the home. Or if you don't have a backwater valve, it could also
happen.
Yeah,
which I don't have one. It's an old house.
Yeah. So, I mean, best thing to do is really get a, like, instead of doing a smoke test, I would do more like a camera inspection, because that will show you every inch of your pipe, what's going on. And then you can pinpoint the exact weakness and then address it, really.
But the rat doesn't come through the crack. He just comes through the pipe.
They come through the pipes, yeah. It's a conduit for them to pass.
But there has to be a problem with the pipe.
Well, I mean, in the sewer system itself, if you have a way that the rat can actually pass. If there's a cracks in the pipe, there's more likely that's going to happen. That's for sure. If you don't have a clapet, it's more likely it's going to happen.
I don't understand if there's a crack in the pipe. The pipe is a straight pipe, or so he'll just run through the pipe, whether or not there's a crack.
There are areas, that's correct, but I mean, it's the entry point that we care about, right? So if it is somewhere subterranean that they have, they can actually pass through something that is cracked, you know.
So the rat will come through from the outside earth?
Well, it depends. Even if it's coming from the outside itself, from the conduit itself, right? If you you're just going to give it more access points to come in. So if it's coming from around the pipe, if it's coming from the sewer, you know, it's just going to find its way in, I guess.
But I guess it doesn't happen too often, eh?
I've never heard so many stories about rats in toilets.
Well, the temperatures are changing right now, so I think any of the creepy critters are going to be looking for a way in, I think. With minus 30s, does that happen, Walter?
Typically it happens a lot when the weather gets colder.
Yeah.
So it's right between autumn and winter. That will be their biggest time where they want to seek warmer shelter. But, I mean, more often than not, we find that they're coming in from the outside somewhere.
Not from the toilet. We don't need to.
Is it a good idea to keep the toilet seat down then?
They can push it open. These things are strong. Didn't you see the video of that little rat in New York carrying its own pizza around? They can do what they want. William, thank you for your call.
Okay, thanks very much.
Take care.
Okay,
so, no, we don't have to worry, Walter, about them. Any kind of, this is not the period, the season, right, where they come in?
I mean, look, it's usually they would have already hopefully found shelter because it's been cold for a while.
Yeah, okay.
But I mean, it doesn't mean, what I would start with before the pipes is I would see if there's any entry points from there.
Yeah.
Typically, that will be where a lot of them come in.
Everyone's panicking right now to use the toilet. Claudio is on the line. Time for one last call. Claudio, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning.
Hi, take it away.
Morning.
Hi, yes, hello.
Yes, hi. I have a problem with, I had a contractor that he did the epoxy floor on a commercial surface, meaning kitchen. And, you know, if you see the wood, the plywood, which has been put brand new, like a 3/4 inch, 2 sheet everywhere to perfection. Mm-hmm. And he did the epoxy, and after a year, the people in the kitchen, you know, the owner of the premises, showed me that there was opening, like pieces of epoxy that open up. So, I mean, I said, we have to find a solution here. So I think that the contractor refused to go back and to do the appropriate repair. So my question is this. Can epoxy floor could be done in a commercial kitchen, number one? Number two, if you have any reference to do the repair, it were more than pleased to go forward, because this is a very, 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 very good customer. And, you know, good people, you cannot afford to lose. That's the way I look at it. But some people, you know, they put their reputation and their commitment in jeopardy. So that's the case of this guy, of this contractor.
So epoxy can be put anywhere, commercial or not. I mean, the idea behind epoxy is that it's supposed to be durable, easy to apply.
Yes.
Now, the first thing I would look at is if epoxy was really used. Is it the two-component epoxy? Okay. Because that also makes a difference on the answer. So a lot of people think they have epoxy, but epoxy is not just, you know, you have a two-component epoxy, you have a one-component epoxy. So that also is a question to ask, to know what is the material that they've used. That's number one. Number two, it's all in the preparation. So in a lot of cases, if the preparation was not done adequately, the cleaning was not done adequately, the paint, it doesn't matter how good it is, it's not going to adhere. Number three is the time between coats of paint. So if there was two coats of paint, was the first coat dry before you applied the second coat? Because the drying time of epoxy is longer than a super acrylic paint or a latex. So to kind of reverse engineer what happened would be a bit difficult. What I would ask to begin with is the receipt of the material, what they did buy. Okay, so we see that, you know, if they bought the right material to begin with, and then take it from there. Okay, the second part would be the preparation, like I said, but now it would be hard to kind of reverse engineer all of that.
Yeah.
The third part would be to scrape away those areas that peeled and just repair them, because they could have been certain air pockets that were not prepared or dried adequately, and they could last you after that a long time. So if it's just happening in sporadic areas before you kind of, if you wish, restart the whole job, try by just strategically fixing these areas and see what happens.
Okay, my other question is that, so I don't think this contractor is willing to do the repair, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, I order for the client a special carpet that goes on the epoxy floor.
Claudio, unfortunately, the show has ended, but...
Correct.
Yes.
I'm just going to say one thing.
Yes.
Claudio, because he's not doing the repair, that's one reason more for you to do the repair strategically in those areas for now. You can call us next week and we can talk about it a bit more in detail.
Thank you to Claudio. Thank you to all of our listeners. Thank you to Walter Assi, again, president of Renovco. We'll be back next week for another edition of the Home Improvement Show.